Support for this episode comes from Signature Bank.
Hey, this is Gary Head, founder and chairman at Signature Bank of Arkansas. 21 years ago, we set out to build a community bank that knows your name, values relationships, and treats people how they deserve. That's still how we do things today. Whether you're buying a home, growing a business, planning for what's next with Signature Private Wealth Management, or need bilingual banking through Banco C, our team is here to help with local decisions and real relationships you can count on. Call 479-684-3700 or visit signature.bank and tell us you heard about us on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilbur.
Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn. I'm excited to be with you today, as always, and I have a great guest with me. And one of the things I always tell you guys when people ask, how do I get on the podcast, is I always say to folks, you know, you just never know. Just reach out to me and ask sometimes. And of course, we have a form on our website at IamNorthwestArkansas.com where you can go to the About Us section. And if you scroll down in that, you can find the form to fill out if you want to either nominate somebody to be on the podcast or you yourself want to be on the podcast and you have something interesting to talk about. And so today's guest is no exception to that. He is Jamie Atkinson. He is a local investor and he actually happens to be running for District 19 for the State House seat as a Democratic candidate. And we're not, you know, you guys know me. We don't do a political podcast. We will talk a little bit about that because it is part of the tapestry of who he is as an individual right now. But we're going to learn a little bit more about Jamie and how he ended up here in Northwest Arkansas. So without further ado, Jamie Atkinson, we want to welcome you to the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Randy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Yeah. I'm doing good, man. It's so good to finally sit down with you. We had a chance to have a preliminary conversation where we sat down and had coffee and got a chance to learn a little bit about each other. But I really would love for you just to kind of share with our audience a little bit of your superhero origin story.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Randy, it's a pleasure to be on the podcast. My wife and I have been listening to you from afar. We were overseas, but I'll get more into that. I'll just start with my background. You know, my Arkansas story is my father and my grandfather have roots here. My grandfather, he worked in the Delta, and my dad worked for Murphy Oil out of El Dorado. But I spent most of my childhood in Atlanta, Georgia, where I went to school, and I went to the University of Georgia. I'm a Bulldog, but I'm also
we will hold that against you.
Yeah, I've converted to the Razorbacks these days. But my story is, I guess I would start with when I was at college. One of the things that really grabbed my interest was history, and I was studying history, you know, Southern history and actually, you know, Eastern European history. It's where I met my wife, who was originally from South Dakota. And we met in college and we soon found, you know, after undergraduate, we decided that we wanted to go be teachers. So we moved out west, as one does, and went to Colorado, where we went to graduate school. And we were really excited about the future being teachers, but I think somebody had other plans because we ended up taking a 90-degree turn. I had a thesis advisor in graduate school, and she was like, had you ever heard of the Foreign Service, you know, the Department of State? You know, I'm just a kid from Georgia. I have no idea what this is. But, you know, Kim and I, we looked into it, and it sounded like an exciting thing, and we went for it. You know, next thing you know, we're in D.C. learning a language and planning our lives overseas.
Wow.
It was quite an exhilarating moment in our lives.
So tell me this. When you first got asked that question about Foreign Service. Were you thinking James Bond? Be honest. You can be honest. I know. You know, people always like, man, what's going on? What are you really doing over there? But were you thinking that?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, it's a little bit exciting. I mean, you think you kind of vacillate between this idea of James Bond and then, you know, the diplomat with the bow tie and the white gloves and the champagne flute. So I figured it was somewhere in the middle of that. But boy, it was. But it turned out to be something completely different, but exciting in its own right.
Yeah,
and that's really it. Really changed my life.
Man, yeah. You know, I think Foreign Service is certainly a noble cause. I always tell. I have friends that have served for the State Department and worked with them for years, and that's not a job that you go into to get rich at all. You know better than anybody, right?
100%.
So certainly, you learn languages. You can learn about culture. You can be cultured because of your experiences outside of the country. And it helps you, I think, also to appreciate being an American, right? I mean, understanding what this country represents, regardless of the iterations that it's currently going through right now. But I think it's interesting to spend time outside of the country because it just gives you a healthy perspective about things. It allows you to appreciate where you came from, but it also allows you to appreciate other cultures.
100%. I could not agree more. You know, my sense of identity as an American never was as pronounced as it was when I was overseas. I mean, it really, you wore that badge of being an American every day. And, you know, it's a privilege and it's really a responsibility we have, especially when, you know, working for the U.S. government, you feel a sense of obligation to, you know, put your best foot forward, so to speak. And what that looks like is, you know, meeting folks where they are. When my experience, I served in and lived in five countries overseas, but mostly in Eastern Europe and Latin America. And one of the things that I found was, you know, all the differences you can find in the cultures and the music and the food and everything. But if you pare all that down, we're really all the same.
Same issues, same problems.
100%.
I mean, it doesn't change, right?
100%.
You know, you scratch somebody deep enough and you're like, hey, you bleed just like me.
That's right. You know, I've been to, last time I counted, about 55 countries, and I've lived in five.
Wow.
And had the opportunity to spend a lot of time in a lot of different places. And, you know, folks just want a better life for their family.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they just want a good life.
So the five countries you lived in are?
Correct. It was, we started off in Argentina.
Okay.
And then from there, we went to Nicaragua.
Okay.
And after that, Bulgaria, Bolivia, and the Czech Republic.
Wow. And so it certainly, I mean, when you think, Czech Republic is beautiful, by the way.
Absolutely.
And when you think of that, I mean, for people that have traveled, you can't think of wildly divergent places that you went. But there were so many similarities, I'm sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I found, like, you know, if you have to meet folks halfway,
yeah,
where they're
yeah.
at. And, you know, our first posting was Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really an exhilarating experience. You know, learning Spanish, you know, in the department, going to the language school in Washington, D.C. and learning.
Which is a very intensive program. I've had friends that went through and learned Arabic. And I mean, they were like, man, they told me they couldn't believe how quickly they pick things up. You know, it's almost like a total immersion when you go through that program.
100%. You know, it was funny because my first experience was Spanish. And, you know, I had all these colleagues that were, you know, learning these exotic languages, and they're struggling like 3 weeks in, they're trying to write their name, and we're out like ordering margaritas. So it was, but Spanish is a tricky language because of all the dialects.
Yeah.
So absolutely. One of the really interesting things that the department does is in a 23 week program mm-hmm. for a romance language considered quote unquote easy is we would sit at a little cart in like a little table with four or five people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. You know, that was our job.
Yeah.
So five, six, 7 hours a day, we just dedicated to learning the language. And one of the unique things they did in the Spanish department was they gave us, you know, access to all the different accents. So a couple weeks we'd have a Ecuadorian person, and then we'd have a Mexican and a Colombian and so on and so forth. But the one thing they did not do in our case was give us an Argentine, which was one of the really most distinct accents in all of the Latin American world. And so we arrive in Buenos Aires on day one, and I have no idea what anyone said.
So would you liken it to like somebody having like a thick Southern accent, or 100%. Like for somebody from the Northeast, maybe coming down to deep Alabama or deep Arkansas,
absolutely
and not understanding what fixin' is.
That's right. Well, you know, in the folks in Buenos Aires, they have their own language. They have this dialect called Lunfardo.
Okay,
and that's completely different from the Spanish. It's almost like Pig Latin, and so they speak this kind of codified language in the city. And so all the cool kids are speaking Lunfardo, and you know, I have no idea what's going on. But my wife's a really in language, you know, learning. She's a real studious by the book person. Mm-hmm. I'm just a parrot.
Yeah,
I hear people saying things on the street, and then I adopt that into my, you know, into my toolkit, if
sure,
you will.
Sure, sure.
And so we do 2 years in Argentina. But you know, the one thing that was the most striking experience I had in Argentina, it was not the tango, and it was not the wonderful steaks and the pampas and the gauchos and all these things, but rather blues music. And it was really interesting how that came about, because, you know, every year our embassies have a 4th of July reception. It's right. Kind of like the big blowout, and we invite folks from other missions and other in dignitaries from the host country. And so our first 4th of July reception, we're eating hamburgers and the whole thing, doing the American thing. And, you know, I start hearing this music in the background, and I'm like, what is going on? I feel like I'm on another planet. They had hired these Argentine blues musicians, okay, who were playing this Delta blues music from the 1920s and 30s. And I happen to be somewhat of a kind of a blues nerd, if you will. I've grown up in Georgia, you know, and my family comes from the Delta. You know, I've always, you know, gravitated to that kind of music. And, you know, it was Bob Dylan got me into it. I listened to Bob Dylan as a kid, you know, and going back and seeing all this roots music, it was a passion of mine. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing this music played by these Argentines. So afterwards, I go up and I'm like, who are you? Tell me your story.
Yeah.
And come to find out, these guys had established a school of Delta blues and, you know, African-American traditions. And they had this little, you know, enclave of folks in Buenos Aires. They were so passionate and so into this music.
Yeah.
And so we started, you know, collaborating and working together. I play a little music myself. And so we became fast friends. And so when I think of Argentina, I don't think of all these other things. I think of the Delta blues. And we've maintained a friendship over the years. And, you know, the same thing happened to me in Bolivia.
Wow.
And it kind of became, I guess, my calling card, you know, in my time overseas. You know, we have these programs, these cultural diplomacy programs with the State Department, in ways that we highlight our culture in a way that we can kind of show the bonds or the similarities between other cultures and ours in a soft diplomatic way to build relationships and in the end really strengthen, you know, U.S. interests.
Sure.
In that way. And I found in Latin America that music was the most powerful tool that I found at our disposal in terms of making a connection with in the culture.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I tell people all the time, music is a bridge. It's a bridge of understanding. It's a bridge of communication for a variety of cultures.
Right.
And you mentioned a good friend of ours, mutual friend of ours, Orson Weems, from the Music Education Initiative. And I remember when we sat down and we originally had this conversation, and I was saying to you, man, it's crazy that you could go down far south into South America and have the impact of the Delta blues music in Argentina.
Right.
It's like insane, right? How does that happen?
100%.
And so, you know, it music is powerful. It's a powerful medium. And I think what people here in Arkansas sometimes miss or don't understand is that the culture, even here in Arkansas, is exportable.
That's right.
And you experience that by being down in Argentina, but hearing music that you had some familiarity with because you have family with roots in the Delta. And so you That's knew right. exactly what that was all about.
Well, it gets wilder because, you know, years later, after, you know, meeting these folks down in Buenos Aires, you know, we went off and at that point we had gone to Nicaragua and went to Bulgaria, but then we returned back to South America and we were in Bolivia. And by this time, I have two boys and they had grown a little bit older and I'd brainwashed them into liking this old music from the past. So one summer, you know, after pretty much every year we'd come back to the States and we'd go back to DC mm-hmm. for language or some sort of administrative thing. And I was like, you know what? I got to show my boys, you know, where they come from. And so we went to the Delta, which I consider to be like the Mesopotamia of American music.
Sure.
You know, so we're going around and I'm poor kids. I'm driving them around, showing them grave markers of old bluesmen that have died 100 years ago. And they're like, well, you know, my God, what are we doing? But then we went to this little town of Bentonia, Mississippi.
Okay.
And where there was the oldest juke joint in the state of Mississippi. And Jimmy Duck Holmes, a bluesman that's there, is Grammy-nominated artist. He hails from there. And you know, some of the oldest roots of Delta blues come from that town in particular. So we drove there one day. I was like, hey, I want to, you know, see if I can meet this guy. So we drive down there. I get out of my rental car, see one guy on the street, and he goes, you must be here to see Jimmy Duck. And I'm like, okay, I guess. I don't know what's going on at this point. So about 15 minutes later, Jimmy shows up and he said, you know, are you here to see hear the blues? And I was like, yeah. So about an hour and a half later, after my boys had a couple Sprites and I may have had a beer, after about an hour and a half of hearing this live music played only for me and my two boys, Jimmy says, that'll be $6. And I just like, what planet am I on?
I know.
This is crazy. Just one of these authentic, just fantastic bluesmen and super nice guy. He actually, you know, worked at Parchman in the 80s, you know, helping rehabilitate
the prisoners. Prison. Yeah. That's one of the toughest prisons in the country.
100%.
Like, yeah. Serious. I mean, like Parchman, you've got Angola in Louisiana. I mean, we're talking like the hardest of hard prisons. So.
Like real chain gang.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes, yeah.
So anyway, Jimmy's a really great guy. We get to talking afterwards and he goes, where are you from? And I say, well, Jimmy, I live in Bolivia. And I was expecting, you know, what kind of response I would get. And he goes, well, my manager wants me to go to Argentina.
Oh, man.
And so I uttered the words before I could think about it. And I said, I think I can make that happen. So he pulls out his phone, hits a couple of numbers and says, make it happen. So the next thing you know, I'm talking to Jimmy's manager. I'm just here on a Sunday afternoon. Just want to hear some blues. And so I get to talking to his manager and I say, I think I can make this happen. So I get back down to Bolivia and talk to some folks at the embassy.
Yeah.
And we decided to bring Jimmy down to highlight our 4th of July festival and do a 2-week cultural tour.
Yeah.
And in the course of doing so, got him a gig headlining the biggest blues festival in Bolivia. And it was like a Christmas day for Bolivians, you know, they're going to get this wonderful blues artist. So we bring Jimmy down to, you're, you know, talking earlier about accents and whatnot. We had this interpreter to meet Jimmy at the plane. So I'm there and I'm there to meet the plane with him. And he comes off the plane and he starts talking and the interpreter looks at me and says, I don't understand what Jimmy's saying. So being the resident Southerner that speaks some, you know, that speaks some Spanish, I became the interpreter now.
Sure.
So I followed this bluesman around Bolivia as one does for 2 weeks. And we stop and talk to student groups and talk to dignitaries. And so I served as his unofficial interpreter this whole time. And
wow.
It was really quite an experience.
I would imagine. Yeah. So. Well, and then, so that really, did that help cement like your love for the blues and having that type of experience?
I mean, it just reinforced it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd long held the belief that music is a powerful tool in bridging cultures and understanding one another and the human condition. And my experience in South America only reinforced that. Yeah. So I put a band together for Jimmy and I took our high school music teacher and a guy that had been teaching my son how to play the guitar and a couple other guys. And we brought a indigenous flute player to replicate the fife music mm-hmm. of North Mississippi.
Yeah.
And so we went into the studio and we cut a record, a Delta Blues Andean, you know, record, which
wow.
I think is pretty much unheard of.
That, yeah, you didn't have that on your bingo card when you went to Bolivia, I'm sure.
I did not have that on my bingo card. So yeah. In the course of this tour, Jimmy formed a bond with the musicians. And a really neat thing happened. After the finale and we played the show together, Jimmy invited the musicians up to Mississippi to play at his blues festival, which is the oldest blues festival in America, mm-hmm. in North America. And a real organic kind of deal where it's an open field and a bunch of people come out, and there's vendors, and there's a bunch of music from around the country comes in. So it was really neat to have the Bolivian guys come up to the States and play. And so then it gets wild. And then in a couple of years after that, they start coming every year. And then we go down and we loop in the guys from Argentina that I'd met 20 years ago. And now all of a sudden we're all up in Mississippi playing together. Mm. So it was like the whole thing came full circle through this bond of the music. And, you know, you take the tango music of Argentina and sure. some of the other styles down there, it's the blues.
Yeah.
In terms of what it expresses and what it, the significance in terms of the human condition. So it's just a really neat thing that I was able to experience.
I mean, it sounds like it. I mean, between you and your family and just being able to be that tour guide for this performer, I think must have been pretty cool. So
it was. It was yeah. super cool.
And I think about the juke joint that we have over here at the Pryor Center. That's something that Orson Weems has put together. And people always say, well, what is a juke joint? And I always tell them, well, just go to the Pryor Center. There's one right in there. And it just yeah. kind of gives you a flavor for what that's about, right? And I mean, you could almost close your eyes and feel like you're somewhere down in Mississippi in a little hole in the wall space that's probably no bigger than, you know, a couple of bathrooms stacked together. And that's the juke joint. So
that's right. I love the juke joint. And Orson and I love Orson. He's a great guy. I love what he's doing here to bring the music in. In fact, these folks that I've been, you know, talking about, the Bolivians and Argentines, they came up last summer. They played at the juke joint.
Okay.
And we also were on Ozarks at Large. So, you know, I was able to share the music here in Northwest Arkansas.
Did you bring them to this library?
I did. They were amazed. And we, in fact, we cut a record that should be coming out on Spotify at some
okay.
point.
Okay.
And it's just kind of a...
Was any of it recorded here?
Absolutely. All of it.
Okay. Yep,
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So it's exciting. It's a kind of a Bolivian, American, Argentine blues band yeah. we put together.
Man.
As one does, right?
Yeah. I mean... You know, and it's crazy that you have access to these kind of spaces, right? When you think of it, because you brought them here and then you were like, oh, by the way, it wasn't like you had to go to a music studio and say, yeah, you know, I want to buy some time to record it. You went to your public library. Right. And this is just a shameless plug for the Fayetteville Public Library.
I mean, it's amazing.
It is.
It's an embarrassment amazing. Of riches, as we had
yes,
said earlier.
Yes, yes.
You
that's,
know,
that's my phrase, man. Don't
I know,
use
that. I
keep telling everybody that. I think I'm going to get that trademark, embarrassment of riches. That,
sure.
And I call, this is not really a trademark, but I call the Fayetteville Public Library the crown jewel, one of the crown jewels of Northwest Arkansas. I think it's right up there with Crystal Bridges in terms of when you think of a space that you can come to, 190,000 plus square feet of space, it's a public library. It's more of a regional library than just a library for Fayetteville or physically in Fayetteville. But this library serves, as I'm learning, as I work at the library too, kind of serve double duty being an ambassador with I Am Northwest Arkansas, but I work at this library. And I mean, this library serves the whole region and that's not lost on me. And I shouldn't be lost on anybody here when they come to this space and they say, oh, it's kind of nice. It's like, no, you don't understand. This is one of the top libraries in the country, full stop. And if you haven't been here, which I'm always amazed at, I was having a conversation with somebody this morning that said, yeah, I was talking to a seventh grade girl that had never been to the Fayetteville Public Library. Oh, and she lives in Fayetteville. And I'm like, we're going to fix that.
That's right.
We're going to fix that. Because again, it's just, I mean, everybody has a different experience. Your experience in terms of using this library, you come here for coffee. We've met for coffee. We've come to fellowship and get together and just talk. You brought people from outside of this country here to this library to see it and record music. And again, it's just the connective tissue that comes together here at the library is pretty special.
It is. It truly is. It's just another example of how superlative this area is.
Yeah.
It really is. We're just really blessed with all the resources we have. I mean, I've been literally all over the world and I have not seen a library like this one.
Yeah. Well, so listen, I want to change gears just a little bit because, and first of all, I want to thank you for your service because I mean, again, as I wasn't joking when I said this, I have friends that have worked for the Department of State or the State Department. And I mean, it is a sacrifice. So I want to thank you for that. You were cavorting your family around all over the country, all over the world and living in different places. And so I appreciate the sacrifice that you made to do that. I have a question for you. What made you get into investing, and how did you kind of pivot from, you know, kind of being a man about the world, right, to becoming a local investor here in Northwest Arkansas?
Well, that's a good question, Randy. You know, you had alluded to this earlier, is, you know, relative to everything, the federal government is, it's not, you're not going to get rich working for the federal government.
Sure.
But we were blessed with a lot of countless, you know, benefits to that career, obviously. But early on, you know, I had a kid, you know, we just had our first born, our son was born, and we're, you know, about 30 years old and looking at some student debt. And, you know, this is the thing, you know, and we're just getting started with our career. So I just started researching and reading some books on finance. I'm a liberal arts guy through and through, you know. I kind of tried to steer away from anything with, you know, numbers and math and theory, and stay with the things I could write essays on. And so, nonetheless, I started reading some finance books and, you know, a little bit of, you know, how to get ahead. And, you know, my wife and I, we didn't grow up on third base, so to speak, but, you know, just normal life or whatever. We wanted to find a way to get ahead. So I got really interested in real estate.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I gravitated towards. So I came up with a plan that we would take our disposable income and start investing in real estate. And so we looked all over the country and did a countrywide search, and we landed here.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why. You know, one of the things folks look for and geographically is an economic anchor.
Sure.
You know? And obviously, we know we've got a ton of them here. We got more anchors than a shipyard in terms of all the things.
I mean, like these little companies like Walmart and J.B. Hunt and Tyson and Simmons.
100%.
Yeah. And the U of A as an employer.
Well, that was the one. That was the one, because, you know, I went to University of Georgia in Athens, lovely college town. So my initial thought was a college town would be great. Mm-hmm. There's always students need housing. And so I started thinking about it a little bit. And one thing I learned was, or I realized was, you know, state universities rarely retract. They rarely get smaller.
And the U of A has grown tremendously since I've been here. I've been here 11 years, and it's definitely a big difference that you find in terms of, you know, just how this area has grown because of the university.
That's right. And and so that was, you know, I looked at it kind of like the SEC plan.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of South, you know, and the Southern state schools were growing at an extraordinary rate. So, you know, I've spent time in Athens, Georgia, but you take the university out of Athens and you don't have really a whole lot else.
Yeah.
And so Fayetteville in Northwest Arkansas really checked all the boxes in terms of not only the Fortune 500 presence in a, you know, a robust flagship university, but also the beauty of the area. It has it all.
Yeah,
frankly.
It does.
And I mean, we say that a lot around here these days, but it's true. And it was true then. And it's true now.
Listen, I say it all the time to people, and people think I'm joking. And I'm like, all my friends on the coast, you know, they're like, what are you doing in Arkansas? And I'm like, first of all, I'm in Northwest Arkansas. So I qualify that. That's secondly, right. Nothing wrong with the rest of the state,
that's
but
right.
Northwest Arkansas is special. I would not live in any other part of the state but Northwest Arkansas. I'm just being honest. It is what it is. I love the Delta. It's beautiful. It's just not my thing. Central Arkansas is great. But Northwest Arkansas is something special and unique, and I'm under no illusion that, you know what I'm saying, that that's what makes this area special. And that's not to say that, you know, I always tell people, any place is going to be what you put into it. And I have put a lot into this area since I've been here. I decided to be a full participant, and in being a full participant, I reaped a lot of the benefits of being in an area that's continuing to grow, as I'm sure you can share some of those same sentiments.
That's right. And you know, the one thing that we can talk about art museums, we can talk about the library and all these superlative things, but it's really, when I first got started here, it's really the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was always kind of our, you know, area that we could recharge our batteries. You know, we lived in some tough places where we weren't necessarily the most popular people in the room. And, you know, I always came back to Northwest Arkansas, and people are always so friendly, and it's just a really the beautiful place in terms of just the hospitality and whatnot.
Yeah.
So when I first got started investing here, you know, one of the most important things that, and this was back in the day when you were, if you were buying real estate, you were calling up the agent and they're driving you around in the big car and showing you the houses that they wanted you to see.
Sure.
You know, we were still kind of getting into the internet age. So, you know, I found somebody that was doing your remote business, which was kind of a unique thing back in 2004. But it was important to build a team and build relationships because this is not a necessarily something you just a transactional where you're just, you know, buying a property, but rather building a team.
Yeah.
And really planning. My wife and I really knew almost immediately that we were going to eventually live here once we left the Foreign Service. So it was really important. So I'm proud of the fact that since 2004, you know, I still work with many of the same people that I met back then. And it was really about the relationships. So when we, you know, when we moved here, and I should clarify, I moved here in the beginning of 2022, we were supposed to go to Ukraine.
Okay.
And we were in the middle of Russian language training and the war broke out and we were, I mean, a couple months away. And,
wow.
And my son was, you know, he was enrolled in international school and we were ready to go. In fact, all of our things were on a boat somewhere in Europe. I mean, they were headed to Europe. So the war broke out and my wife, who was, you know, much smarter and more attractive than I am, she...
Sounds like you married up.
I did. It's always a stress. You know, yes. I surround myself with people better than me.
I did the same thing. So.
So she's, you know, as a senior level diplomat, they voluntold her to go back to Ukraine to reopen help reopen the mission once it became apparent the Russians weren't going to overtake Kyiv or in the early days of the war. So my youngest son and I moved here full time. And yeah, it's at that point, it became very easy for me to transition into something I'd been working on for the past 20 years. And I just haven't looked back.
Wow. So is she in Ukraine right now?
No, actually, she's doing a tour in Moscow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How's that? How's that going? Well, that must be interesting.
I mean, interesting is, you know, in the State Department, if you say interesting, that can mean
like a lot of
30
things.
Different things.
Sure,
and,
sure.
So I'm going to use a different word and say it's complicated.
I would imagine.
It's complicated.
I would imagine.
You know, you don't have a lot of privacy. You know, my wife's never going to break down on the side of the road and be without assistance.
Of course.
Because she's got lots of friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just it's a strange dynamic. But, you know, Russia's one of the safest places to be for somebody, a credentialed diplomat.
Sure.
So it's not necessarily dangerous, but rather very inconvenient and stressful in terms of.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, obviously, a lot of people look at world events and world situations through the lens of, you know, whatever they're reading or watching in the evening news. And, you know, there is that. And then there is what's actually happening on the ground.
That's right.
And it can sometimes be fundamentally different than what you hear or read about each evening.
Right.
And so I think people, I try to remind people of that quite a bit. So.
Yeah. Things can often be much different than what you read in the press.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she'll be back hopefully later this year.
Okay.
And we can
reunite. Move it on from there.
That's right.
Now, in a situation like that where she's in Moscow, do you have the ability, if you were inclined, could you go visit her or no?
Absolutely.
You could.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, I still carry a diplomatic passport.
Okay.
And I'm able to travel there. You know, I've got my plate's pretty full these days.
Yeah, it is. You got a lot going on right now. So.
But, you know, the irony is that Russia is someplace that's always held a special fascination for me. And I would love to be able to visit.
Yeah, it's one of the few places I haven't been able to go that I've really wanted to go. And I have some friends that went to Moscow. And of course, you know, I think we're both common age. So we grew up during the Cold War and
that's right.
Experienced a lot of that. I was actually in Berlin not long before and after the wall came down.
Wow.
So I remember that, right? And, you know, for some people are like, oh, I just read about that in a history book. And I was like, I was actually there. So,
that's amazing.
Which is kind of cool. But I mean, it's like, so you have a different perspective about history about culture and about different countries. And so I think that's really interesting. And man, we could go down a rabbit hole about this. I wanted to ask you, because again, not that you already have a lot on your plate. You're doing real estate investing. You're raising a family. You're keeping track of your wife who's in Moscow.
That's right.
And then you decided, you know what? I still have room on my plate for other things. What caused you? And again, while my show is not a show about politics, I'm curious to know what drove you or helped you make the decision that, you know, I'm going to run for office. I see a need here, mm-hmm. and I feel like I can serve that need. What was it specifically for you that kind of took you down that road?
Well, you know, Randy, it wasn't initially on my bingo card, so to speak.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And overseas, we were very careful to be apolitical. You know, it was the nature of the work. And we served and worked for a Republican administration.
Can I just stop for a second when you say that? Because I really want people to understand that when you serve in the Foreign Service, when you serve at the State Department level like that in other countries, you really have to be apolitical.
That's correct.
Because that way you serve the needs of the United States of America.
That's correct.
Not whoever's in office at that current time. And I think that's kind of lost on a lot of people right now because they think, oh, it's extremely partisan. And I'm like, it's the least partisan space that you're ever going to find.
Absolutely.
It really is,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, that's just the way that it is. But I think because people are not, they don't understand it. They haven't talked to anybody that's over there and
that's
they
right.
just don't have a frame of reference. And I think it's important that you bring a different voice to that conversation and a lens through which you've seen things that allow you to kind of look at both sides of the argument and both sides of the coin, if you will.
That's right. That's 100% correct. And it's one of the you know, my service overseas working with the State Department, you know, I feel like, you know, I serve my country overseas. And since I've been back in Arkansas and I've spent some time in the community that I love dearly, that it's time for me to serve here.
Yeah.
And you nailed it, you know, in terms of in the State Department, in the Foreign Service, we're serving the needs of all Americans.
Right.
And serving that through foreign policy. And I kind of view politics the same way. You know, I'm running to be a representative, and that's to represent the interests of everyone.
Sure.
And then that coupled with my background in real estate, you know, I've seen a lot here in the last 20, 22 years in terms of how this place has grown leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in some cases, you know, in the front and center for some of that. And, you know, we have a housing crisis here in Northwest Arkansas.
It's an understatement. Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I feel like with my background that, you know, maybe I can offer some perspective and help find the appropriate solution that benefits our community.
Yeah.
And so those two things together, you know, and I'm frankly an empty nester now. Both my boys are grown. My youngest just went to college this last fall.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. And I got two goofy dogs at home and and my wife's in Russia. So I thought, what the heck?
You know,
I'm gonna pay it back for the things that I've been blessed with here in Northwest Arkansas.
Okay. So I'm going to put it to you this way. You're running as a Democratic candidate for District 19 for the State House, and that serves Johnson, northern parts of Fayetteville, and some of Springdale.
That's
Is that
correct?
Okay.
100%.
It serves all of Johnson, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. All
That's right.
So, okay, cool. So let's say you win.
Mm-hmm.
You're headed down to Little Rock. What are some of your initial goals that you'd like to see? Things that you feel like, you know what? These are some things that I can do in the first year of my serving the constituents of that area.
Right. Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, one of the first things that I want to do is get a lay of the land. You know, it's going to be important to really understand the dynamic down there in Little Rock.
Sure.
You know, depending on who you talk to, you'll get a lot of different answers, right?
100%. Yeah.
But I think it's important to keep in mind what I'm hearing when I talk to folks on the street, when I'm knocking on doors and talking to the people in the community, and to really listen to the constituency.
Yeah.
And I feel like we live in an age where there's a lot of folks that have a lot to say. We're almost flooded with information.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have these screens in front of us and we forget how to listen to folks.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I did a lot of overseas was, you know, negotiate with folks and compromise with ideas and find common ground. You know, it's one of the things our founding fathers, when they wrote up the papers, that was one of the things that they wanted. And sometimes I feel like we've gotten away from that a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, some people would say, oh, well, maybe that's a Pollyanna way to look at it. But I mean, that's kind of how things were done when the framers of the Constitution brought this country together.
That's
you know, they wanted, because all of those guys didn't believe in the same exact thing. And I think that's something that we all need to understand. And it's, as I was telling somebody yesterday, it's the reason why I watch news channels and some programs that I wouldn't normally, it's not normally my thing to watch, but I watch it, right? Mm. It's like why I tell people that are maybe hugely conservative, hey, you should watch NPR every now and then. You should listen to NPR every now and then. Just hear what people are talking about. Understand what, you know, we all, as Americans, we all are struggling with some of the same issues. And, you know, the reality is that unfortunately, some of the powers that be like to pit us against each other so that we don't realize how much we have in common.
That's right. 100%. I almost feel like America is like a big ball of yarn. And when you start tugging on the yarn, like we've been doing in recent years in terms of pointing out all of our differences and the things that we, you know, how we don't see eye to eye, you keep pulling on that yarn and eventually you have nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I had the privilege and blessed to be able to serve in the Balkans. I spent a lot of time down there. I was an election observer in Kosovo. And, you know, one thing that I've seen, you know, folks that pull on that yarn, and I'm keen to support a different way in which we do the, you know, going back to the music, you know, using, looking for those similarities.
Yeah.
As common ground. Because it's very important that we all work together for a better community.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, that's well said, Jamie. And I really, again, I appreciate you lending your story to our podcast. I thought when we sat down at our Segas that we would have an interesting conversation, and this certainly did not disappoint. If anybody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do it? Whether they want to reach out to you, maybe with a question or looking for some advice around real estate investing, or if they want to talk politics with you, right? Talk shop.
So, that's right.
Or they may be a young person that has decided they want to serve their country in the State Department and want to get some ideas or advice from you. What's the best way for people to get connected with you?
Well, absolutely. You know, on social media, I guess, is the most obvious answer for my Gen X answer here. It would be to reach out on Instagram or Facebook.
Okay.
You know, I have a campaign website, Jamie for Arkansas.
Okay.
And
we'll, just for everybody's edification, we will put all of that in the show notes so that way you can get connected with him. I would also encourage those that are in business or want to learn more about Jamie in general, I'm going to put his LinkedIn profile on there so you can connect with him. And that's a nice way for people to do that.
That's right. And regardless of how you find me, you know, I'm more than happy to talk politics, real estate, SEC football, whatever the case may be. And that's one thing that I've tried to do is in the real estate space is to help out some younger investors.
Sure.
You know, and kind of show them the blueprint of what I was able to do and just help folks out, pay it forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jamie Atkinson, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. I know, like I said, I promised you an organic conversation, which this was it. And so whether you came here to talk about the blues, whether you came here to talk politics or to learn about real estate investing, there was a little bit of everything in this episode. And so we really appreciate you sharing your story.
Thank you very much, Randy. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, folks, there you have it. Another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. To learn more about us, please visit IamNorthwestArkansas.com. We really, really appreciate all of our listeners, and we would certainly encourage you to check out so many episodes that we have online, over 400 episodes on everything related to business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life here in the Ozarks. I'm Randy Wilburn, the host of I Am Northwest Arkansas, and we'll see you back here soon with another new episode. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit IamNorthwestArkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Searching for local businesses in Northwest Arkansas just got easier. From restaurants to roofers, boutiques to baristas, FindItNWA.com connects you to the best local businesses with just one click. Discover something local, something great. Visit FindItNWA.com today. Find it fast. Find it local. FindItNWA.com.